today's training is why most people quit. And in Napoleon Hill's words, most people are drifters. They think quitting is about failure. It's about the evidence that's present in front of them or contrary to where they want to be. In reality, it's about how we interpret the process. We start with excitement and clarity, but as challenges show up, which they will, progress feels slower than expected at all times and costs more money than we anticipated, and doubt, interference begins to creep in. And that's where most people quit. Not because they lack the ability, but because they misunderstand the evidence. We think slow progress means it's not working. We think discomfort means we're not capable. And we think uncertainty means we're on the wrong path. But those are all signs that we are growing. When we understand why most people quit, we give ourselves a choice to stay in the process just a little bit longer, because success isn't about talent. It's about staying long enough to let the process work. Blaine, in that idea of letting the process work, what comes to mind for you?
Well, you mentioned it with the comment around drifting. We get captured by external circumstances. And I mean captured by this, in the sense that we look around us and we say, this is now what's true. And it's not what's true. I mean, the idea of signs. Signs don't precede. Signs don't indicate where we're going. Signs just indicate where we're at right now. And they are lagging indicators, and they would not be appearing unless we were on the path to wherever it was that we were trying to get to. So, like you said, it's a matter of interpretation. So when we begin to look at how are we interpreting this information, then we have leverage. We can be, and be part of that, says that we're now in control, in the sense that we have agency here. Yeah, external circumstances aren't knocking us off course. I have a decision to make at this point in time. Do I stay the course, or do I, alter it just a bit? But when we're going to talk about this a little bit longer here, or in a little bit here, but for the sake of what? Am I even on this journey?
Yeah, and we have to remind ourselves in our consistent behavior as well. Lesson number one that I want to talk about with you is a lot of people quit, these drifters, because the results take longer than they expected. They somehow think that linear time is within the context of their control. And especially today where everybody rewards speed, but there's no rushing growth and results don't show up quickly. People will begin to interfere with their potential. What are some of the things that people can do to manage that expectation at the beginning of how long it takes?
Well, yeah, I grew up on a farm, and one of the things that has always stuck with me is when we put the seed in the ground, I didn't see anybody standing over the seeds going, grow, grow, grow. Where's that shoot? Come on up. Where's it at? It takes time. Gestation takes time. So I think part of it is you just begin to appreciate that there is a natural rhythm to the way things unfold. And if it's something new that you've never tried before, you don't really know what that rhythm is. All you can do is plant the seed, water it, feed it, nurture it, keep the weeds away, and then let it do what it's intended to do. It will grow.
And how do you feel about, our mentor, Bob Proctor, who was so involved in Napoleon Hill, the Institute, the Foundation, et cetera. How do you feel about, the idea of putting a time frame on your objectives? I was always in agreement with as quickly as I can, for the sake of what, talking about acceleration. I always felt that as if you said, I want to make this much money by the end of the year, by the end of the month, by the end of the week, you were just creating more resistance, because every second that ticked, there was less time. And unfortunately, results, outcomes take time. And so we actually create resistance. I was curious how you reconciled this idea of everything has its own time with velocity and speed of trying to get it done as quickly as possible.
I work with a little meme that I've played with for a number of different years. It's already happened. I just haven't arrived. And when I can work with
just
that,
interrupt. Mine goes, it's already happened. What am I doing to interfere with it? So it's very similar.
Well, very similar. Yep. So that's exactly what's kind of going on here. So if I haven't arrived, what's in the way? Yeah. And it's a matter of frequency.
And it's a matter of, for me, the reaction to the fear is what gets in our way. What we do to accelerate and create resistance by going over it, under it, through it, around it, lying to it, cheating it, manipulating it, denying it, all of those different things. What we resist persists, and getting comfortable with the fact that it will happen in divine time, as long as I put my attention and intention into that divine direction as well. And so, up front, we must tell ourselves that we can create velocity and speed, but we have no control on how long outcomes take or what outcomes are. And which leads us to the second lesson that I'd love to learn. If anybody would like the exercises on how to deal with not quitting when things take longer than expected, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. One of the other issues that I mentioned earlier, lesson number two, is people quit, or we quit, because we misinterpret discomfort. Discomfort's often mistaken for failure when it's actually a sign of growth.
Absolutely. Yeah. If I'm not uncomfortable, I haven't set a goal that's big enough for me to grow. Yeah. I'm just, kind of in a comfort zone that doesn't require me learning anything new, doing anything new, or leveraging things in ways I've never leveraged them before. So an underused muscle, is going to be atrophied if it's not used. But if you start to use it, lactic acid builds up, and all of a sudden I've got a little discomfort. It's because I'm using that muscle. And that's essentially what's going on here. Discomfort is a great sign that something is happening.
Yeah, I think we can reframe discomfort as progress. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned our friend Bob Proctor. He used to talk about A goals, B goals, and C goals. An A goal is something I know how to do. A B goal is something that I know that other people that know how to do it, so I can actually get that information pretty quickly. A C goal is something I don't have a bloody idea in hell how I'm going to do it. But I know that it's important to me, so I'm going to just jump into it and do it. And I call that a growl. Yeah, a growl. It's something that grows me. It's something that grows my organization. And growth comes with discomfort. With growing pains. My grandmother used to talk about growing pains when I was a kid. And I actually had growing pains as my bones were stretching and stuff. So that sort of stuff comes into play here.
Yeah, it certainly does. And one of the other things to realize is the energy of, for example, a comfort zone has a constrictive energy. If you stay in the comfort zone, things get smaller and you end up not even getting or able to get out of bed, depressed, anxious, frustrated, guilty, resentful. If you stay, though, on the other side of it, which is the anxiety zone, this is where you see highly functioning people, highly activating people, actualizing people also end up not being able to get out of bed, depressed, anxious, etc. Because if you stay in the anxiety zone, far outside of the learning zone where this discomfort lies, this is where injury occurs. This is where constriction comes back down. So there is, if you look at this issue, with three concentric circles. In the middle is the comfort zone, which pressures inward. If you don't go to the learning zone and stay in the learning zone, pretty soon, if you stay in the learning zone becomes your comfort zone. What used to be your anxiety zone becomes your learning zone, and you have a new level of C objectives, et cetera. And so we want to mirror the universe and we want to expand. And the only way we expand, grow, or progress is with the recognition of discomfort that, we are going outside of what we know. I tell people all the time that feel stuck that I coach. I go, being stuck's a good thing, because if you were sitting in a room and you weren't trying to get to a bigger room and all the doors and windows were locked, you wouldn't even know it. You wouldn't feel stuck in that room at all. The fact that you feel stuck tells me you're trying to progress, get out of that room. And it's a good sign that discomfort of feeling stuck is a good sign that you're growing and progressing. If anybody would like the three concentric circles, the exercises on the comfort, learning, and the anxiety zone, and how not to misinterpret discomfort, then please email me, david@dmeltzer.com. David means beloved, Meltzer servant, david@dmeltzer.com. The third lesson that we want to teach today, and I want to remind everyone that Blaine has graced us and will stay over to answer all of your questions here as well. Lesson number three, we quit because we compare our beginning to someone else's middle or even end. And not only is comparison the thief of joy, comparison distorts our expectations, the management of those and development of those expectations, and definitely creates unnecessary pressure and constriction of where we want to be. You've coached so many people about competition and comparison and this distortion. What are some of the things as we look to recognize the difference between pursuing a potential and comparing ourselves to someone else?
Yeah, that's a great question. Overnight success comes to mind. There is no such animal as an overnight success. You know, and you're going to be at Augusta at the Masters coming up here. And we've got these pro golfers. They are just amazing. And what's interesting, there were some studies done with Olympic athletes, with extraordinarily high performers. And what was fascinating there, and they had a way to actually calibrate this in the study, was when you measured competition, what we found was that these high performers, these extraordinary athletes, were competitive, not with others. They were never competing with somebody else. They were competing with themselves. They had these standards inside that served as their benchmark. And they very rarely looked at what the other was doing as a way to determine what was next for them or what they should be doing. And you know, that wasn't universal, but with the extraordinarily high performers, it was always back on themselves. You know, what's that next level for me? What's that next level for me? And if they stubbed their toe, you know, it was like, okay, that's mine to do here. I've got to learn something about this. And they used it as a stepping stone, not as a signal that things were all lost.
And that works within the context of business as well. You know, I see so many people, they'll look at even a young entrepreneur that's, you know, very successful within the realm of their expertise. And they may be as young as 19 or 21 years old. But if you look back, they were trading baseball cards when they were seven.
Yeah.
And now they have a huge franchise or a collectibles business, or they were playing video games since they were six, or they were playing in coding for all types of different things, or they were, you know, cleaning trash cans as an entrepreneur, selling candy. And I know that people don't equate that as the experience, but it is. It is development of skills, knowledge, and desire that has led to the 17 years that it on average takes for overnight success. It's just that they started earlier, and they don't become a billionaire overnight. Right. If you look at Gates and Jobs and Musk and Bezos, none of them, and some had reached great economic success early in their careers, but it wasn't as early in your career as what we would determine compared to a 50-year-old who's starting, you know, to understand AI today. You know, they're at a disadvantage, because most of the people that are successful today utilizing some sort of AI have been doing it for over 10 years already.
Absolutely.
And if not all of them, I should say, I apologize. So we can't compare our beginning to someone else's middle or end. And we need to manage those expectations. If anybody wants our competition comparison exercise to help you focus in on your own trajectory and limit the comparisons to track your own personal progress through quantitative analysis of one, assets that you own, and two, the time in which you're interfering with your potential, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. The fourth lesson I wanted to cover today is we quit because we overthink, we analyze, we use logic instead of action. Overthinking creates paralysis. It delays progress. You cannot change emotion, or energy with logic or analysis. And I find a lot of people create interference by utilizing the power of their thinking to their disadvantage. You have helped me understand this about the imperfect action and adjustment along the way. I call it the AAA strategy. Get alignment, take action, but prepare for adjustment.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, analysis paralysis it comes into play here. And the interesting thing about life is that, yeah, everything in life that is living, and this applies to your dreams, everything in life that is living is moving. And when it's not moving, you know, if it's held too long, it starts to stagnate. So analysis, yeah, it's important when you're looking at adjusting, but you want to be sure that you're keeping yourself in motion in the process. And the only way that you can determine whether this is a workable path or a workable action is to take action. You know, you can't imagine it happening without actually experiencing it happening to make the determination about, is this workable or not workable? And then you make that, as you mentioned, the adjustment. Yeah, did it get me the result that I thought I was going to get in terms of this incremental step? If it didn't, I make an adjustment, but I keep moving. And sometimes a step backward is the appropriate move to make in order to set yourself up for that next step forward in a different, little bit different direction.
And one of the other things that I utilize besides the AAA strategy is a go, no-go plan for myself so that I make a decision up front according to my timing and risk tolerance of when I'm going to finish doing research for my book, writing the first chapter, when I'm going to do this. You know, our friend Rob Angel, who I love, who invented Pictionary, he wrote a great book. But I joke around and I said, you know, that's four books that he wrote. It took him so long because he didn't have a AAA strategy. He didn't have a timing and risk tolerance analysis, and he didn't have a go, no-go plan. And so every time there was more to add to the book. Every time, remember everybody, whatever you're working on, there's more to add to it. But yeah, you need to upfront know alignment, action, and adjustment, not this is going to be perfect before I take action. And that's the incongruency that exists. If anybody would like the AAA strategy or the go, no-go plan, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. It's a great way to align with your timing and risk tolerance and get things going and adjust and prepare for that adjustment as well. The fifth lesson that we want to cover today is we quit because we focus on outcomes we cannot control. You know, this attachment, this is what you started to talk about. I'm going to let you take over and tell me why we shouldn't say I'll be happy when I sell this business, make this much money, get married, do whatever, compared to focusing on the purpose, the passion, maybe even the profitability that we are guided towards in the pursuit of our perfection.
Yeah, the illusion of control, and I mean that very literally, the illusion of control gets more people in more trouble more frequently than just about anything I can think of. The only thing that we really have any control over, and this is true of every single human being on the planet, is our thoughts, our attitudes, our emotions, and our behaviors. Those are the only things that we have control over, and they're all resident in us. They're not outside of us. So when we're trying to control external dynamics, yeah, we can influence them. We can actually do something to cause something to move a little bit, but it's really more about how we're working internally. the outcome is going to be what the outcome is. And it goes all the way back to the very beginning of our conversation here. It's about interpretation. It's about interpretation. Yeah, how do I interpret what's going on right now? And that I can control. I can control that interpretation. And that's where my ability to be resourceful actually lives. And this goes back to the analyze it and make an assessment and keep moving.
Yeah, for me, there's three things we can control. And I utilize the five daily practices to control that. So understanding my effort, my attitude, and the consistency of that effort and attitude, what I am paying attention and giving intention to, what I want in that divine direction of where I think I want to be, and aligning the meaning of the mistakes, setbacks, and failures, all the previous lessons to it, to not limit my imagination or my self-image, noting you'll never overachieve your own self-image. And two, knowing who you can help and who can help you. Three, in order to focus in on the effort, attitude, and consistency, know your how. Understand time, the 24 hours that you're guaranteed every day, except for the last day of your life, you'll be cheated. And when we know the non-negotiables, the negotiables, the prioritization of knowing our now, to antidote to feeling overwhelmed by attaching our emotions to an outcome for the sake of what, and then understanding the importance versus the urgency, as Eisenhower had his matrix, to understand what and how we prioritize the circumstantial behaviors of each day because of the uncertainty and the lack of control that we have. So we need to detach from those outcomes and stay committed to the process and understand that we control our effort, our attitude, and the consistency of it. And therefore, we are applying our why. This is what Blaine means by for the sake of what. You are not searching for your purpose. You are not searching for your why. You are applying your why. And when you apply your why, you're utilizing the infinite energy, the infinite intuition, intelligence, the infinite inspiration, and you're dissipating, dissolving the interference that we create by attachment and control illusions. And want to reiterate this lesson. If you would like the five daily practices to help you focus on the effort, attitude, and consistency, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. David@dmeltzer.com. Final lesson that we want to discuss today is we quit because we lose connection or we interfere with the connection to the infinite, which gives us, to me, an illusion of purpose or lack thereof. So without a clear understanding of applying our why, it becomes easy to walk away or quit when things get difficult. And in other words, faith. The first five lessons are about the wisdom of great mentors like Blaine Bartlett, blainebartlett.com. But lesson six is faith. Because most of the process of success, passion, purpose, and profitability comes from evidence that makes no sense. It comes from evidence that is completely contrary to where we want to be. And yet we continue to put the effort, have the attitude, and be consistent in it and applying our why. Purpose fuels persistence. Your wonderful wife loves to say that if our purpose doesn't outweigh our pain, we are going to quit. This is the lesson of today. Blaine, how do we make sure that we're applying our why, that we are purposeful in our intention, a definiteness of purpose?
Napoleon Hill talks about desire. Wallace Wattles talked about desire. Thoreau talked about desire. Desire lives inside us. It's not outside us. And that's the distinction between inspiration and motivation. Yeah, things can motivate us, but those are all going to be out there somewhere. Inspiration, I don't go looking for my purpose. My purpose lives inside me, and it looks for expression. It wants to be as fully expressed as it possibly can. That's called desire. I desire it to be this. I desire it to express itself in this manner. That sort of stuff comes into play, but it's an inspirational move, not a motivational move. And inspiration is real hard to put a lid on. Yeah, it's hard to quash if you keep connected to it. That for the sake of what? rooted in that is what matters. What matters to me? What do I get to have, do, or be as a consequence of taking this journey? What do I get to have, do, or be that I wouldn't get to have, do, or be if I didn't go in this direction or if I didn't set this objective for myself? That's what we want to be able to tap into and continue to touch as things move.
So good. And motivation will get you up, get you started. It'll get you back up and get you back started, but it's not going to get you there. You have to live in spirit with inspiration, applying your why. There's so many reasons why people quit. And if you would like the exercise of motivation versus inspiration, make sure you email me, david@dmeltzer.com. In the lessons today with Blaine and I, before he starts taking some questions, we have to remind ourselves that we quit because results take longer than expected. We quit because we misinterpret discomfort. We quit because we compare our beginning to someone else's middle or end. And we quit because we overthink, analyze logic instead of act. We quit because we focus on outcomes we can't control. And we quit because we interfere with the in spirit, the infinite energy, inspiration, intuition, and intelligence that exists out there. If you want any of the exercises and guides, the training from today, or my book, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. David means beloved. At D, that's my first initial. Meltzer means servant. david@dmeltzer.com. Happy to give you the guides, the exercises, and my books for free today and every day. Just email me. Just remember that quitting is rarely about the obstacle. It's about the meaning we give it. If we expect things to be fast, easy, and certain, we'll quit when they're not. But when we shift our perspective, everything will change. We begin to see how slow progress is still progress, how discomfort is growth, uncertainty is opportunity. The difference isn't talent. It's perspective and persistence. Success is built in the moments where we feel like quitting, but we don't. And when we keep making that choice, we give ourselves the chance to achieve what most people never will. Not because we're different, simply because we didn't stop. God bless all of you. This has been Why Most People Quit Training. Blaine, as always, I want to thank you so much for joining me.